Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Stats. It is the 16th day of October 2020. We are going up until 2 o'clock as usual. I'm David Ellis. With me today as the technical operator and producer is Dennis Johnson. The number, as usual, is 434-1790. And we encourage you also to communicate with us via WhatsApp. Let's take the first caller today. Hello. Good morning.
Greetings, my brother.
Yes, sir. Morning.
Greetings to all our listeners. Yesterday, as I was listening to broadcast, and then later on into the news, I heard that Barbados was designated a COVID risk country. And I asked myself, how did these guys come to this conclusion? But then I sat down, Mr. Ellis, and analyzed it. I just said to myself, you know that in traveling, there's some sort of risk. You know, and I said to myself, basically, that as the minister said, the tourism officials got to get on this right away because it doesn't sound good to the island. But then I got it too also from another angle, Mr. Ellis. The American government have an embassy in Barbados that represents their interests. And these people are on the ground, and when they look at how we are living in Barbados, not following protocol, hey, you won't wear the mask, they get aboard the buses also. They most likely will have to report back to their country. Well, look, there's some sort of risk in this country. We, the citizens of Barbados, don't see it that way. Understand? Because most of the COVID cases are coming in. And also, when you look at America, America is a place that I think they're like mad, because I saw on TV in Miami at a bar. People in there are just like the normal, you know. So, but what I'm saying is that we ourselves have to set an example concerning this
But I don't really believe that what you're seeing on the ground here in Barbados is consistent with Barbados being designated a high-risk country, though. That seems to be quite far-fetched. The number of cases that we have in Barbados and the number of deaths that we've had in Barbados, we are certainly classified as a low-risk country by the international standards. But of course, I don't know what else the United States is taking into consideration in coming to that conclusion. I don't know if they're linking it to something else that they want from Barbados that they're not getting. but certainly, Britain, Spain, France, the United States, they are all considered high-risk countries. Jamaica, Trinidad, Guyana, Barbados, with just, 218 confirmed cases or something like that, and 7 deaths. That's outrageous. You and I know that. And I don't think that anybody could come to that determination on the basis of what you may see in some places where people may not be wearing masks. High, medium, and low risk are determined by the number of cases that countries have, the degree to which there is a high amount of infection in a country.
But Mr. Ellis, you know that if an American citizen leaves the United States and come to Barbados and they are negative when they left home, and contract this virus in Barbados. When they return to the United States of America, you know they've got some lawyers out there that like to sue very fast. And they probably could say that, well, you know, the government did not give...
I think you're a little too afraid of America, tell you the truth.
Afraid of America?
Yes, you are a little too afraid. Well, not a little, you're by far too afraid.
Mr. Ellis, you don't really know America, don't you?
No, I know America, but I don't think that... I mean, one has to go with what is reasonable, was logical. Doesn't matter which country is saying it. Or there's got to be something else that is motivating America, the Centers for Disease Control, I think it is, to go to designate Barbados as a high-risk country. If you tell me it's a high risk that somebody might go in your shop and rob you or something like that, perhaps you're likely to get shot if you come in certain areas, as we are seeing on the ground here. But that's not happening. That's not even happening to tourists. That happens to locals. I just cannot see any justification for the designation of Barbados as high risk when it comes to COVID. Now, if you look at the United States, everybody knows what's happening there. I mean, you can't even go to the White House. High risk there, you know. High risk in the campaigning which is being done in some parts of the United States. I mean, two of the people working with Kamala Harris just tested positive. And the Democrats are among those who have been very cautious and very careful. Notwithstanding that, people are vulnerable. The United States is undoubtedly high risk. If they want somebody else to join them in that designation, they're reaching far to come to Barbados, in my judgment. Okay? Don't justify that. You can't. All right? Well, it sounds as though you're reaching. You're reaching for something to explain it.
Well, that is why I start with the point that I do not know what you mean. That was just a thought of mine. Because let me just explain something before you go, right? Let's say we had, we got an embassy overseas in a country where the citizens are not practicing observing protocols. So don't tell me you don't know that. Quite here on the radio station, all the time that they're not practicing protocols. You got to be consistent in telling the person on the mask, as much lower risk as you call this. This needs some responsibility. And the diplomat report
back if you go by that designation, that yardstick, I suppose every country in the world could be so classified, therefore. You really believe that right across the globe, everybody is practicing the protocols that are required?
I did have a bad
So why would you, so no, but I don't accept. I really don't accept your argument at all. I mean, you could have your view, but I don't agree with that.
Let me finish my point here, right? And it report back to all Honorable Minister, Prime Minister, Ms. Mia Molly. Tell her, look, warn the Barbadian citizens that this country is going to these people in practicing protocol. Will you consider that a reasonable assumption? You've got to protect your citizens, you know, sir. And we have a responsibility to protect our visitors too. So we're going to try to behave ourselves regardless of
I agree with you to encourage people to use the to follow the protocols.
But then,
that does not qualify us as high risk based upon the designation that I have become more familiar with since the COVID-19 virus broke out. You know, you have to have a high degree of infection within the country to be so classified, as has been the case with some of the countries that I've mentioned earlier. Okay, thank you very much for your contribution. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
A pleasant, a blessing, and a wonderful good morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
All the better for hearing you, my friend.
Oh, Lord, would that please if my heart delights.
I know that.
No, Mr. Ellis, I want to deal with four things. And I know when I tell you this, you will tell me, oh, no. I want 2 hours today. Is that possible, sir?
How much you paying?
But you tell me what is the price per minute, and that can be all.
No, I could tell you, to get two hours here, it is going to cost you over $2,400.
But that's chicken feed, Mr. Ellis. Between me and you, you put 12 and I put 12 because you're my brother.
No, I'm putting down with you. You make it sport for you to come in and tell me what?
Are you listening, though? I want to do all this for. I want to be four things. Lies, ignorance, an educated person, and a common sense person. How it sounds so far?
As though you qualify in all the categories that you've just mentioned.
I know, and you will put me at ignorance as the highest and a big lie at the second, right?
Well, whatever. You go along. Let me hear you.
No, it is wrong to tell people as an educated person that they will own their own land when a common sense person or you can't own it because you got to pay a land tax. It is wrong to shut down schools for 2 weeks and the business community took the positive step of saying who got people there to what can't work. Now, Mr. Ellis, it is also wrong, right, to tell people you know what it is to suffer. And then, on the other hand, you suffer hundreds of people. Mr. Ellis, it is 69 days today, because they haven't heard anything from you yet. It's a nice number for a lot of people, 69. Is that amount of days before
Christmas? That's your favorite number.
You and I. No, Mr. Ellis, it is wrong and wicked to lambaste the Met office after being in business for 40 years and you got to wait till the sun come out. Then after 40 years with that kind of business, you should have had a shade so that you will not have to go under the vehicles. I think it is ignorant of us not to believe the Met office because we do not get a 5-minute or 20-minute reading of the weather. And prevention is better than cure.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Have a
good
day.
Have a pleasant and a wonderful day.
Yes, sir. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, David.
Good morning.
It's Glenn Murray.
Yes, sir.
Oh, you sound a little nasal today.
Nasal. I find that once in a while, when I come in the studio, I can have a throat problem of some sort, but generally I'm okay.
Oh, good to hear that. You'll recall that last Sunday's Brass Tacks, when the five representatives of the parties were on the program, we were trying to get an insight into how COVID-19 would have affected their campaigning. Mm-hmm. And it was established that, of course, with the social protocols, the COVID-19 protocols being imposed and observed, they had changed the traditional way of meeting people, greeting people, knocking on people's doors, etc. In their canvas and their general interactions with persons, because you had to establish physical distancing, social distancing. No hugging, no shaking of hands, sanitizing yourself and whatnot. So that would have had an impact on their campaigning, as also that would have had an impact on the length of meetings being held, etc. But I think the one thing that I think we need to examine though is how has the impact of COVID-19 had on their financial ability to hold meetings or to execute their campaigns in whatever way. Because I must imagine that political parties no longer hold cake sales and fish fries and putting themselves parties to raise funds. Those are days of more simple days of Barbados. Now there's a heavy reliance by political parties on benefactors of various sizes and various sources, particularly, as you know, from the private sector, the business sector and whatnot. And they themselves would have been impacted by the whole decline of the economy and decline of economic activity. And I have been doing some checking around. Some of the parties tell me that it has had a severe impact on them, where it has meant that they have had to reduce the number of meetings, the scale of the meetings, the staging, most of them can't afford any elaborate, what would now become my...
Is that a bad thing?
No. I'm just describing the situation. So they've had, as the bears said, cut their suit, to suit their cloth. They've had a compromise and whatnot. But what I'm saying is that what this has done, or what it means that we have to look. I think we're reaching the point where we have to look at how political parties are financed. Period. Not only at election time, but how their day to day, month to month operations. I feel that we're moving to the point where now, just as we have to register charities and have by the law, and they have to be subject to administrative and accounting scrutiny and sources of funds, how they spend, etc. By law, I feel that is the time where political parties who are not registered entities, I think political parties, just like churches, should be compelled by law to be registered as such entities, and that way they along with that, they come in a registration, a process of inspection, of management to make sure they're compliant with the law, whereby funds, etc., have to be accounted for. But I also feel that we have to look at the point, if we want to maintain democracy and sustain democracy, where especially newer, younger parties who are struggling to survive, if we give them a chance to catch a foothold, I think we have to devise a program where if you are registered or have been in existence or have had a number, some money for to the last election, 176, that you are entitled to a receipt of a certain sum of money. I'm not talking about the subvention, which is now divided. Normally used to be divided between the two parties, but now controlled by only one party. I'm talking about there needs to be, where the public is prepared to pay the price for democracy, maintaining that democracy.
I really don't put the focus so much on how much money they have, and that money does not guarantee democracy in political parties. Indeed, one big question that we must pose from time to time. They say charity begins at home, and democracy should begin in political parties. But these new political parties, from what I see, they are run in basically the same way that the old political parties have been run. You know, the maximum leader in any political party about here could do as they like, especially the more dominant that person is, the more ruthless they could be. The people in the parties are afraid to come out and speak most of the time. People steamroller them. And my point is that the governance issues within political parties don't get any scrutiny. So no amount of money that you put in there will address that particular issue. And often what happens is that the same way that they run the parties, what we have seen over the years is that some of the people who run the parties run the country the same way. For me, governance, the governance issues, if you're registering a political party, is going to make a difference in that regard. Because what I hear, and I remember some of the issues that we have had when they come to the fore, you hear, well, that's a political decision. So once it's a political decision, you don't have to account to nobody. Once you got the power, you just steamroller everybody else. That's how it works.
I think you're making a fundamental point, but I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I don't think it's has to be one or the other. I think that is all part of the reformation of the political party, of politics in general. You have to start with the political parties who are the instruments of the politics on an ongoing basis. And when you're talking about the management, a lot of that has to do with the character of the persons in the party, along with the character of the leadership, and people who are prepared to stand up for their rights of democracy.
Many people in
their party.
I must tell you, watching Barbados over the years, there are few people in this country who are really prepared to stand up for anything. And that applies to political parties as well. Very few people want to step out and say, this is where I stand. And I can tell you something else. The biggest disappointments in this country are the more qualified people in the country as well.
because they think they have less, more to protect.
They have more to protect. They depend upon this. They depend upon the government for a contract. The job. They see their jobs in a completely different way from what we perceived they would have seen, because I suppose in the professions that they have chosen, most of the time they're depending upon the government to get work.
But in the final analysis, it depends on the inner being of the person, their character, their sense of values, their sense of right and wrong, integrity and what. And,
that's true.
And it has not always been so, but we need that.
So how much of that we have about here?
I wouldn't say there's a lot right now, but it has not always been so. And it does not mean that it will always be so.
So why has it diminished over the years in your judgment?
It has diminished over the years because a lot of it has to do with, like, some of the factors mentioned about people that are prepared to go with the mantra that everybody has their price. And other people are afraid of...
It's materialism,
It's
materialism.
If you want politics to be what it used to be, it led to development, but we have people prepared to make... The reason why we have national heroes is because they made sacrifices on their principle, what their beliefs and whatnot. Even the political ones. There's no reason why that should not be the core of the Barbadian thing, not just to be a bad...
Man, you're looking for Barbados that dead and gone.
But no, not everything about that Barbados is dead.
Not everything, but no. the kind of Barbados that you're looking for will require quite a number of people to be changed in the way that they see life, and I don't see that happening again. I think that is.
So let's talk. You don't believe this talk of returning to any traditional values? Those would have been considered traditional, but although we need to start.
I think so much has changed. I think a lot has changed. I mean, the concept of good and evil, to me,
right and wrong.
Yes,
sure.
but they got some gray areas too. You know, it's not black and white across the board, and so many things.
But
that's
where morals come in, and principles, and even religion.
Yeah, but do you know that that's like language. It's dynamic. It changes with time.
I know. It changes. But it doesn't mean... But the cornerstone, the fundamentals should never be abandoned.
If you're looking for leadership from political bosses and stuff like that, political parties, I must say that the nature of politics is such that it is very difficult to get that kind of leadership. Politics, it tends to breed people who, they enter with a whole degree of idealism. But after a while, the whole institution of politics seems to alter their behavior and their thinking. And this thing about having to follow the party line, for instance, puts people in a situation where they prefer not to say anything rather than speak out about things that offend them. Sometimes they speak out, but within the councils of the party, they're beaten down and beaten back, and they say nothing outside of that.
But there used to be, in some parties, in two of the major parties, the B's and the E's, I know of stories, of instances, where people stood up to the dominant leadership of the time, where they were prepared to no matter what. And the dominant leadership practice of democracy, conceded, amended, compromised, or whatever, but there was not this cut of personality where whatever you do is right or wrong, you first and you only, your way, as they say, or the higher. I think that people, it all has to boil down to what you are within yourself as a person, what you stand for, what you are representing for. In your daily life, if you do it in policy, you'll probably do it in your job too, or your social relationship. Principles are present, right? And I still think that some of it is needed, some is possible.
I hear you, but I will tell you something.
I'm not holding my breath, but I think we have to strive for the ideal.
Whether it is politics or other spheres of human activity, one lesson I learned was this. If I have a problem, and I want to draw attention to that problem, I would make a big mistake if I depended upon other people to support me in my cause. Many, many people have been through it.
All right.
Where they believe that they are part of a group that will stand up and say this is wrong, and we are going to fight for this or we're going to fight for that. You know, the minute that they step out, they're on their own. When they look back, not a soul beside or behind them. That's how people operate.
I know that is part of human behavior, but still, they're a person. I'm still saying, the odd man out, the maverick. We still need some of those persons to. Otherwise,
well, the biggest maverick Barbados got is Caswell Franklin. You know, but how many more you will expect to be like him? I mean, he's always been a maverick. Always. But
again, that's his nature.
That's his nature. But there are many people in Barbados like that.
Unfortunately. But they can be.
Well, I hear you. I'm holding my breath, though.
Me neither, but it's something we have to work towards. They're right. Having a proper West Indies team, but then we have to work towards that.
But that dead, too. Trust me, that dead. That died with community-based cricket in Barbados and the rest of the region.
By the way, I can't resist this one. I have this to say. What does the slogan, "This is we," mean?
This is what?
This is we. Yeah, you haven't picked up on it? The Barbados Cricket Association has launched this highfalutin, a lot of grandstand for this new public relations campaign, and the slogan is, "This is we."
Only one we?
This is we, but not even W.I. West Indies. This is we. What does it mean?
I don't know. You got to ask on
there, Riley.
How
do you follow?
You ask Mr. Riley.
All right. Have a good day.
Down to brass tacks. Hello. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, David.
Yes, sir. Morning.
Yeah.
How are you today?
I'm very good, you know. Now, I did what you told me to do.
What's that?
Before coming on this year.
Research?
Do your research. Now.
Congratulations. Let me see how well you've done it.
David, I did my research and I did my study on this whole issue about the General Secretary resigning from the Senate and resigning from being a General Secretary. And I did my research, and both parties had it wrong. And if you allow me to explain to the public, Tony Moore did not had to resign from the Senate. In the first case, Tony Moore was appointed as the trade union representative, being that the trade union movement, the Barbados Workers Union, at that time, and they believe it still is, the biggest trade union movement at the time. So she was appointed not by political party, although you could be affiliated, but she represented the body and it enshrined in the Constitution when the Governor General appoints some person you could represent. An agency, anything that is national, and Barbados Workers Union fall under that, that it is a union of national quality which is being considered. One. The other hand, that the Barbados Labour Party is making song and dance about is that Sir Roy Troutman, the last three that went into Parliament, Leroy Troutman and Yvain Grace, were members of the union. What they did not understand, that those men were employed by the union, and they did not went into Parliament as a member of the union. They were workers of the union, just as how you would have had a representative working for Caleb Shepherd, and they went and ran in elected politics. Unlike the union and the government, if you are a member or a worker of the government, you are not allowed to enter into elective politics. You would have to resign, like I'd be Cindy Ford and Ronald Jones, and then would have had to resign. The onus would have been on the constitution of the trade union movement, where they would have had to say, if you enter elected politics or you want to enter elected politics, you cannot be employed by the trade union movement. That did not happen.
The trade union movement does not have that posture.
But that is what I said. The
trade union movement is suggesting to people that it is a natural aspiration to be a member of the, or a worker within the trade union movement.
But that's what I said.
And be a member of parliament as well.
I said, if they had that enshrined in their constitution.
It is like when you become chief justice, you get knight. All right? So when you become a trade union leader in Barbados, you get a pick in parliament too. That's how this has been projected to the rest of us.
But that is not so. Because that's what they allow me to explain. These workers, Bobby Martin, those fellas, were employed. They did not went and enter the Democratic Labour Party as an agent for the union. They went as a member of the party working with the union.
And so what?
Good. But this is what's coming at. That was allow me to explain.
I want to understand.
No, Tony Moore, no. The only person could have dismissed or told those workers that they cannot enter elective politics would be the general secretary and the executive of the union. And that did not happen because there's nothing in training there to stop them. Now, being general secretary of the union, no. And I heard, she said last night in the news clipping, I heard it in this morning, that nobody could make her resign from the general, being general secretary of the trade union movement. The only body that could make her, she is the manager, I would say the manager of the trade union movement. The only body could stop her from running in parliament would be the executive of the National, the Barbados Workers Union.
I don't understand where you're going in all this.
But you ain't going to understand. But
are you taking real long to camp? You are taking really long.
Ellis, let me explain myself. That
listen, but I hear working with you, but
cannot be the judge, David.
Man, listen, I am the judge right now. I am the judge right now. As the moderator, I am the judge. And I have to... And listen, I'm here trying to protect you and the public from a long-winded explanation. Come to the point.
But look, that's what's going on.
Please.
But that's what's saying...
Taking too long. Your run-up too long.
Why you like to cut people... Why you listen?
Because you're taking real long.
When you become powerful, you cut them.
I am powerful.
You have the right.
But I'm giving you. I am giving you. I am giving you the opportunity to speak. But I'm just saying to you, you got to come to the point. You know, with some dispatch.
Get to the top unless you climb a ladder. No, unless you jump, you're phantom.
Man, your ladder too long, man.
Well, too long for you.
Yes.
Too long for you.
Let me hear what I said.
Too long for the public because we're going through.
I'm giving you the chance.
Understanding a lot of things.
I'm giving you the chance. Go on. Let me hear you.
What I am saying that I heard her last on the radio this morning said that nobody could make her resign from being general secretary of the union.
Mm-hmm.
The only body could do that, and she's right, is the executive of the union, and if the members of the union decide on that. The other hand is the people in St. George would rather believe as they think that she should not represent them as
general secretary
of the union.
Let me tell you something. This isn't a place for you to campaign for St. George North. I am not here to entertain that approach. Because if I do it for one, then I gotta do it for all. And I don't want to go there. And you are experienced at this thing, you know. You're very crafty. So, you know, this approach that you are using today, now I understand why it takes so long to come to a conclusion. Because the punchline has got to be about who's to get what in St. George North. You can get on a platform and get 5 minutes on any platform in St. George North and articulate that. But I don't want you to abuse this opportunity here today. This is down to brass tacks. I mean, at the end of the day, I do apologize if you think that I've been less than tolerant on the point, but I have the station's interest to protect, all right? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hello. Good morning. Two things.
Morning.
First thing, you guys need to have a medical expert come, as Dennis Johnson said yesterday, for that program, and explain the state of affairs in Barbados. I don't know how many people have been tested in the past couple of months, or how many people were found positive. But I'm pretty sure that there were tests that are being done, and I'm pretty sure that they'll find that nothing, no one has been found positive, which suggests that there's no community spread. So the only way that's going to happen, that people understand that that's going to happen, is if you force, you're going to force it. Get somebody on the radio program and come and say to Barbadians, there is no COVID in Barbados. Get somebody there, because somehow, if you keep it secret, the fear continues. And added to that is the fact that partly it is not legal. It's not, there's no law that says you have to wear a mask. Can you understand that? There's no law. You know, I went into a place 2 days ago and they asked me to give my address where, I was, where I'm living. And I put it down, but he said the next time a retailer tell me I give them where I live, I ain't getting in there. Because that's not even legally required. You are probably in a situation now where these retailers are going overboard to serve in somebody else's interest, certainly not mine.
Right, so that according to the protocol, the protocols and the regulations.
It's not law.
Well,
so they can't jack you up.
I know that the government of Barbados has taken has gone to Parliament and has made various regulations from time to time. I think one was recently issued by Parliament.
Oh yeah.
So yes. Well, so I think that from that what program. I gather, those the call for people to have their names written and that sort of thing is all part and parcel of that those regulations.
Well, okay.
So to say that it's not law, I don't know that you're correct.
Well, I know that you're correct either. So here's the thing: why not make a situation where we would all know what's going on? Because if the retailers are taking advantage of a situation, then they would have the choice to go and choose. And if I decide I'm going to go to retail, that
I don't think it's fair.
Mask, they're going
to
stop it.
I don't think it's fair for you to say that retailers are taking advantage of a situation.
They are taking advantage.
They are being asked. They are being asked to follow specific rules and protocol.
Okay, fine. But they're being asked to put people on the sidewalk too. Well, the air conditioned tellers are in there, but nobody else in the bank.
That's a consequence of social distancing.
Huh? How can we do social distancing in the supermarket? And they're retailing too. The banks in Bridgetown are retailers too. They retail services. So how is it that some retailers don't really, because the supermarkets know that if you social distance, them can't make a living. So they can tell you, come inside. That's why they can't make a law about the social distancing thing, because the supermarkets are going to complain. The retailers are going to complain. But yet, not the retailers, the people that sell clothes are going to complain. But the retail banks will tell you, stand up outside in the yard. So if that is not a law, if there's no legal requirement, people need to know this. They need to know this, because if a security guard come and tell you, well, you can't get in there, it has to be because of the bank's policy and not because of the laws of Barbados. And that would happen if you bring somebody on the program and come and say so. Point blank, it is not a legal requirement for you to stand up on the sidewalk.
I'll just say this, you know.
That's part one.
When it comes to the whole question of protecting yourself from contracting COVID, everything cannot be written in law.
How it can is, you contract
listen,
that which does not
listen,
exist? That's
listen,
the problem.
Listen,
if it doesn't
listen,
exist,
listen,
why
listen,
are you
listen,
going to contract it?
Listen. You got to exercise some common sense and the common sense associated with the science of COVID is that we ought to exercise physical distancing. Okay? So even if you don't have a written law that tells you that, common sense should tell you that you need to protect yourself in that particular way.
Massey and all the other supermarkets in Barbados are not exercising common sense. That's what you're saying? That is exactly what you're saying. Because I see two different policies coming from operations depending on what it is that they're serving up to the public. They're completely opposed to each other.
All right,
so one is saying you got to stand up in the yard. The other one is saying you could come in and shop. So one of them got to be right and one of them has to be wrong. And to this point, there has been no, if the supermarkets have been doing it for about 3 months now, and there have been no examples where COVID has developed. So therefore, the supermarkets are right and the banks are wrong. Clearly, that's part one. There's a part two as well, too. Here's the thing. You want to criticize political parties. Hey, go for broke. Serious. Let's do it. But at the same time, the political party is doing something that you are doing as well. The political party will give you the impression that they are there to change Barbados, to make things better, for a development, for a brighter tomorrow, to, all peace for everybody, guns and violence or whatever it is. They will say whatever they need to say. But a political party is a business that receives funding and returns the favor for that funding going forward. That's all they are. Everywhere in the world, that's all that they have been. And the radio station, on the other hand, does the same thing too. Radio station will give you the impression that they are there to inform. Well, they entertain. Entertainment doesn't cost anything. But they are there to inform. We're going to keep people abreast. We're going to enlighten the public. And that's what we are here to do.
Mm-hmm.
But a radio station basically is an advertising business. It's advertising radio. It's not information radio.
It doesn't provide information, and it doesn't educate the public.
It will provide sufficient information to give the impression that that is what they are there to give a sense of relevance.
Are you getting
but you
into
beyond
the,
a certain point, and you would. Well, sorry,
you're into the degree to which it does so. That's a different matter. But you, in principle, you can't deny that the radio stations, generally speaking, do provide information to the public, and it helps to educate. I don't know how you could be in this kind of business and fail to do that. It's a natural part of what you do.
Well, let me say what you've just said, but put it in my own words. The radio station will do what it has to do to give the impression that they are educating you and they're informing you. But they are not going to go behind the scenes and dig up the kind of information that you need to have in order to be enlightened.
That is a lot of...
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
It flies in the face of all that has happened over the years. And what continues to happen. I mean, I would say to you that even on a program like this, this is a call-in program, but ever so often, we take the opportunity to provide information to people, information that they do not get otherwise, and especially as it relates to contemporary events. So I dismiss this notion about, oh, all you're interested in is money. Look, radio and the media begins from what are people's needs. If we continue to focus on what is the need of a person, then from out of that, we are able to create things that respond to that information need. All right? So as we speak...
There seems to be a ceiling beyond which you're not supposed to go.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know about the ceiling. Well, they got legal ceilings.
Programs and call it programs for 30-somebody years.
Pardon me?
And whenever someone calls in with information that reaches to the core of a particular issue, they are somehow spoken over, they are cut, they're somehow diverted, shifted.
I can't deal with generalities. I would have to get something specific.
What can it take? I'm talking over 35 years and you cannot...
Well, no, but I still can't deal with generalities. That's a generalization that I can't.
You want to be called names to get some specifics?
No, I ain't interested in hearing the more specifics from you, man. You sound as though you always sound as though you come to pick a noise. Jeez, hombre. Oh my goodness. I wonder, you're a tough man. You know you wake up in the morning.
I am gone with you.
Please. If we can have a conversation that does not appear as though we are quarreling with one another, it isn't worth it. You know, they could come in here this morning, and I should not be in a position after I've spoken with you to have the rest of my day marred because I have encountered you, you've had whatever experience you've had overnight and into the morning, and then you come and transfer that to me and my day is messed up. It isn't worth it. All right, let's move on. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air. Welcome. It is now 10:48.
Morning, David.
Good morning. Yes, sir.
Good morning, Gerard Pescadere.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Hey, cool. How are you?
I'm okay.
I've been holding on for about an hour, but that's not the issue.
For what? An hour?
Listen.
We program in an hour yet?
Well, nearly there. Anyhow, And like I said, it's not an issue. But I held on this long because I hear all the political talk. I heard some of your, one of your callers who every day listen to the program speaks. Sometimes not the union. And I have the rules and regulations of the Barbados Workers Union. He needs to get one, a quote from it, before he starts calling and giving you all these. It's to a call information that he probably is popping from somewhere, but he does not have the source. Anyhow, mm-hmm. that's not what I called about. Let me see it. This morning, because my mind cast back to 2 years ago when two senior police in this country made an interpretation of the seatbelt law, no, not the seatbelt law, the cell phone law. And I did not agree then. And subsequently, after that, they were transferred. This morning, a caller, well, in a conversation with Cashy, the sergeant, I think it is Seward Johnson, said that a caller said that they saw, they called him and said they saw a policeman using his cell phone. Or they see policemen driving and using cell phones, voice driving, marked police vehicles. His response was that they were given permission or something like that. I went berserk because I don't know of any amendment to the law that will give an exemption to the police to use a cell phone once they pull over the normal citizen for using that cell phone when all vehicles that I know that come standard has a cigarette lighter and the more modern ones have Bluetooth. Therefore, it cannot be a law for the Medes and one for the Persians, Mr. Ellis. And to come again and tell the public that when you see a police driving and using his cell phone, he's been given permission, I think we've gone the wrong way. We're sending the wrong message to the public. And therefore, I had to call and make people aware, and I hope that the Mr. Sergeant Stewart Johnson and those in the force are hearing, because this cannot be right. You have to be saying to your fleet, get Bluetooth devices in them, and do like every other person is mandated in the country to do. So don't tell me that the police, the fire, and the defense force have been granted permission to use their cell phones while they're driving, but the normal citizen can't. It cannot be fair and it cannot be right, Mr. Ellis.
I suppose the most important part of this is, why did we put a ban on the use of cell phones in the first place?
Thank
you. And the degree to which a policeman or any other person in the protective services would not be vulnerable to making that same kind of error only because they happen to be in a particular job. So,
in light of the fact that they have devices issued to them that the normal citizen wouldn't have. So they have their handheld radios, they have their VHF radios.
The whole idea is to avoid having the cell phone as a distraction. That is the objective, and therefore
I can't buy the excuse that I was given this morning.
A policeman could also be distracted while driving on the road. So I think every step needs to be taken to try to reduce the policeman and anybody else's vulnerability to that. So I understand what you're saying. All right.
Thank you, David.
Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. It's interesting to see that this much vaunted drug called remdesivir is now said by the World Health Organization to have little to no effect on COVID patients' chances of survival. Now, this is a drug that has been in use here from what we've heard from doctors as well. It was also one of the drugs that was prescribed for President Trump for his coronavirus as well. So there is a mad scramble to come up with vaccines and for drugs that work against COVID-19. And I really thought from all that was said previously, that this particular one was said to be working, but now the World Health Organization says no. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Ms. Dennis. How are you this morning?
I'm well. Good morning. How can I help you?
Hello.
How can I help you? Go ahead.
Oh. No, I was calling. I was heard a little while ago speaking about the people who is here and so to the entities and things and so on, the things that is going on in the country against what you would call the average citizen. But I'm saying that there are some people who will stay, but we have the problem that we've yet to get Barbadians to understand unless we come together to fight these cases and these causes, we will suffer all the time. Because I'm going to give you a case in point. I bought a particular item from a store a few months ago, and that item would have cost $1 and cent, and I will say $2. I went back yesterday to purchase the same item, and believe it or not, the same item costs now $4 and odd cent. Now, my position is that I will come out, I will speak, but in order to get the assistance of other people, I went. Like, I would keep making the point that we need a strong consumer body in Barbados, where no one was being talked about, but suddenly, for some unknown reason or the other, that like it going under the carpet too. But unless we as a people understand that we are responsible for the growth and people by way of or purchasing things from them, and we are being used and we are ostracized and kicked aside and don't come out and stand up and fight together as one, we won't get nowhere, Ms. Dennis. And that is the problem that we have. And I am saying that I would like to see this consumer body come about, and I won't want nobody who may be running and in charge of consumerism or anything like this seeing things going on. People are prices going up, people are complaining, but you can tell them when you coming to look to see if it happening. Them is silly, my silliness. So all I am saying that one day, Mr. Ellis, I may probably pass and I will show you a few things and you will get where you're coming from. But there are people out here who is there, but they can't get the support of the other people because they will tell you, my pot don't buy that you. And you can't do it that way. So, buy it. Thank you.
All right, sir. Dr. Brastax, welcome to the program. Good morning. Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, hi.
Am I on?
You are.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. And to
good morning, Alvin.
The OB staff and listeners.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
You know, as you said before, that I like too much politics. You know, you got to like something. So if I do like too much politics, I don't take it as a sin. But I hear listening to two stations, CBC and VOB. That's because I like enough politics. On one station, they're discussing politics, Canada, with the St. George election. Talking anything, everything. And on the other station, I hear Mr. David Ellis and a gentleman we call the taxi man. And he's told not to in other words, he has to talk politics. He has to talk about the St. George election. But on the other station, and I hope you listen to it tonight, a gentleman was on the air with the moderator about 45 minutes talking bare politics. Is this a country rule that he has to discuss his own VOB?
Well, I think we try to respect a rule that has been in place for many years, which is that once you are into an election, we try to discourage campaigning on the air as it relates to that specific election. that does not rule out a discussion about politics in general, because there's a lot more to discuss in the country. But if you're going to go in the direction of seeking to promote or to pull down any of the candidates in this upcoming by-election, then we try to steer clear of that. All right?
But, Mr. Ellis,
and I don't know that. Is something wrong with that?
I listen to you and the gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
At no time, nothing you just described, he did.
Yeah, because when I sensed that that's where he was going, I said, but
no,
we can't
you
go
from
there.
The, you
so it means that he had the opportunity to speak on matters other than trying to launch into a promotion
okay,
of
Ms.
one
Ellis,
candidate.
Okay, Ms. Ellis,
let
me explain to what you're saying. Because you talk about his length of time, I will let you listen back to it tonight and see how much of the time you were speaking and he was silent. But I will say this to Ms. Ellis.
Mm.
I would like to say, you just tell me about what people, what the station like to do in the election. Ms. Ellis, that same gentleman, at the time, the historian, was lambasting the last government up to days before the election, Ms. Ellis. Because you know, he tells his listening about that every day. He was criticizing the Democratic Labour Party up to the last day or the same day, Ms. Ellis, not on the election day. And people like me and Straker Stanisby and Wall was talking for the DLP after a day or two before election, Ms. Ellis.
Sir, I don't understand where you're going with this
argument. So where I'm going, Ms. Ellis?
Let me make the point to you as clearly as I can. I said to you that there's a lot that can be discussed about politics in Barbados as we speak today. What we are not encouraging is a promotion or any downgrading of any of the candidates who are running in the by-election. You have latitude to speak about a lot of other things. So I really, you know, what I have...
Mr. Ellis, you have a lot of people to speak at all lately. Mr. Ellis, what I'm trying to tell you, Mr. Ellis, that we as Barbadians ain't forget what happened before May the 24th. People were allowed to speak freely, Mr. Ellis.
Alvin, I've been sitting in this chair for by-elections, general elections. I have been significantly involved in determining our policy direction here. In all of these moments, and I can tell you that when it comes to general elections, we have not encouraged that because we are also bound.
Well, I am laying that up to days before the election.
You know,
I was campaigning for the Democratic Labour Party, Mr. Ellis, up to days before election.
Well,
Alvin, was campaigning for the DLP.
That get beat,
Tory Love.
Alvin, I'm telling you that we are guided by the regulations in general elections. We have been guided by broadcast regulations. And
okay,
those regulations...
So what called,
when let me speak, Naman.
But then
let me speak, because you are just... there are days when I just have difficulty with you, because you say what you have to say, and then... Once you want I want to say something, I can't say anything. You must cut in and you must stop me from speaking. Both of us can't speak at the same time. So I don't understand where you're going with this talk about what you did before and all of that. We have followed these rules as much as we could over the years. I don't understand what you're talking about. And whatever may be in your head does not justify us going in that direction.
Okay,
right,
let me
now
get to my point for calling. Because
please do.
That was because of what I heard you and now taxi man like you just now. Because when he was the
historian... Man, you come to waste time on that.
No, it's not waste. It's a fact. Let me get to my reason for calling. Now, Alvin believes three leading union leaders was in bed with the opposition before the last election. Three union leaders. And as Classic say, he smells fish. And I'm telling you this here. For anybody to deny that trade in either Fontibel or Riverwood. And I'm telling you this. When I hear a union leader say that they were asking for 15%, when all of us know it was 18, and then to tell me that the downgrades and thing that was going on and going on and going on with downgrades, and at the same time, the government was borrowing money from the central bank, which Dr. Clay Master called printing money, to keep workers employed. Because that's what he told me. And the statsman and you, all of y'all told me, it is wrong to print money just to keep people working. And at the same time that was going on, two major unions was asking for 18 and 23% increase in salary. At the same time, that they were borrowing money to pay the same workers that they want that type of increase for. And listening to the foolishness that I'm hearing and the media that was aggressive before the 24th could come out and tell me they sell for five because the economy was bad. Barbados' economy was bad from 2007. Professor Owen Arthur told all of us that. And he told us that we were in so much debt that they wouldn't be able to borrow money to 2012. I heard him say that.
You know.
So I want to know how this union leader only know that Barbados was in trouble in 2018 when they agreed on a 5%. It is insulting to Barbadians when people can speak like that and the media is not down on them. Because I don't believe that nobody should be so, I don't want to use that, that they could believe that we are so backward and foolish to believe people borrowing money to pay you and they were 18 or 23, but then tell me they settled for five because the country was in trouble at that time. Barbados economy was in trouble for the whole 10 years of the Democratic Party. They came in and found a meltdown of all the financial institutions in the world. And even after they get out at 2011 or 12, it takes time to build back. And those three union leaders, including Starcom and the National Newspaper, kept pressure on that government that was under pressure for the last four straight years.
I would just remind you
that what?
That at every turn, wherever there was criticism of the former administration, the former administration was invited to come to the public and express its point of view on all that was being said.
Can I bring one and show you?
Let me say what I have to say. Because I need to counter you. People who have not been living in Barbados and have not been listening will walk away believing that what you are saying is true, which is that the former administration was criticized and never given the opportunity to put their side of the story. They refused on a number of occasions to take up offers to come and represent themselves. You know that. And that is why you took it upon yourself to become the spokesman on behalf of the Democratic Labour Party on this and other programs. So,
can I continue?
Yes.
And give someone to me?
Yes.
Let me explain to you, know, say something. And I question you about it before election and after election. The leader of the opposition of that time, present Prime Minister now, accused the government of defaulting. The minister.
Are you fighting an old battle?
Just a minute.
You're stuck in the past.
You're stuck in the past.
These matters were heavily canvassed and heavily discussed up to 2018. 2 years after, it took you 2 years to be able to come here and start to regurgitate this same stuff.
I was the sure one thing that you understand.
You were silent for quite a long time. And now you come, after all of this time, to come up with this.
I want to show you that you made a mistake just now. I only want to show the mistake you made.
What's the mistake then?
I told you this before, and for those who never hear that you just say that you're wrong, let me explain to you again. The opposition leader, now Prime Minister, accused the government of defaulting. The Minister of Finance that you just said will never come at all and represent themselves. That is what you just said. Chris Sinclair came on the radio, all the national radios, and then he select time to come on Brass.
Alvin, stop wasting. Look, no. I done with this because this is something that I don't understand why we are going over something that happened what 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago. We just what useful purpose does this serve for us to just go back over that? The people of Barbados voted on these issues already, and you are just coming here to just, I would suggest to you that this is an utter waste of time. That's what it is. Let's move on.